It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer. Ken, thanks for being here as we discuss the future of a nearly 125-year-old prison facility. The Green Bay Correctional Institution houses about 970 inmates. That's more than 200 inmates over its design capacity, according to State Corrections. Call in about aging prison infrastructure and your solutions, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. State Representative David Steffen is a Green Bay Republican, represents District 4 in the Assembly. Representative Steffen, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. It's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
So you have argued for years that the Green Bay Correctional Institution should be closed and replaced. Why is now the time to build a new prison?
Well, I spent the last 8 years working on criminal justice reform and prison reform issues. So my entire political career and as a part of that have been evaluating our systems and our infrastructure. And while corrections is often not the most interesting of state subjects, it is a core function of the state. And when evaluating all 37 of our state prisons, we've had two independent architectural and engineering reviews of all 37 facilities. Green Bay Correctional Institute has come out at the top in terms of need for replacement. As you mentioned, it's nearly 125 years old. It is suffering from a confluence of crises. It is overcrowded by 137%. It is understaffed. The inmates are living in an inhumane environment. And the facility, according to the architectural and engineering experts, have said it's outlived its lifespan and is failing all five of the major prison building codes at this point. So we have a situation where we have, as you mentioned, nearly 1,000 Wisconsin residents who are under 24/7 care of the state in a maximum security environment, where at any time, any day, we could have a catastrophic failure of a massive piece of infrastructure. Unlike the medium or minimum security facilities and the inmates that are in them, these are the worst of the worst. Over 90% of the individuals are there for violent offenses. All of them have over 10-year sentences minimum to even be in that facility. And so some of the options, such as early release and those other options that have been explored, and I have supported some of them, are just not available to this specific group of individuals. And so we have to be realistic. Infrastructure has an age, it has a lifespan. Now, this one has exceeded it. It is literally one of the oldest facilities in the nation. And it's time that we make the big decision when we have the money to replace that facility.
It is, though, one of five maximum security prisons in our state. Could inmates be relocated to other facilities and then decommission this one?
If those facilities had space, sure. But they are also over capacity. So there's no room at the end. We are in terms of over capacity, we are number four in the entire nation in terms of over capacity. And so we are busting at the seams. And so the other facilities that you mentioned, it would be great to just relocate them, but they are suffering from similar overcrowding situations.
Hmm. Talking about the state's aging prisons with State Representative David Steffen of Green Bay, you can join in along the way at 800-642-1234. Rewinding to 2017, you had introduced a bill that requires the state to sell the Green Bay prison buildings and land to the village of Alloway, where it's located, and that would happen after a new prison would be built in the area. Do you still think that that would be a possibility, that that would be a way to proceed?
I do, although I am more open to just about any option at this point. I wouldn't say I'm desperate, but the inmates and staff at Green Bay Correctional Institute are desperate, and the entire correction system is in a precarious situation, in particular, again, for the maximum security inmates. And so we have to explore all options. In fact, my most recent budget approach with Governor Evers was, listen, let's just start the process. Here's some money that we incorporated into the state budget that we gave back to him and said, here's some money to just find a place, find a site, identify it, purchase the land, and do some initial infrastructure. Let's have the discussion. Since this is a three-year process minimum to build a new prison, let's at least start the first year, which is finding the site, doing some of the initial infrastructure, and then let's have the discussion about the size of it, the services, that sort of thing at another time. But let's at least start that three-year process now.
Get the initial steps underway. What about price tag? I mean, we've heard in the past years, $309 million, $350 million, maybe more recently. What would this cost?
Yeah, there is a big cost by having delayed this decision since my initial introduction. You are correct. It started at around $300, then $350. We are now approaching a price tag of nearly $500 million.
Wow.
And it's still, unfortunately, it's still a good financial decision because the current price tag for trying to fix GBCI is $250 million. And so you would spend, the alternative is to spend $250 million on a dilapidated facility, and you would still suffer the same capacity issues. And so my thought is in my approach has been, let's build a better prison, one that's not built on 19th century prison standards. I want to have one that is more geared towards rehabilitation, vocational services, mental health services, one that is really geared towards reentry. What we have now in GBCI was made and designed in the late 1800s, where it was all about warehousing individuals. Nothing was geared towards rehabilitation, reentry. And so the facility itself plays a role in the failure of our recidivism that's occurring here in Wisconsin.
And, you know, talking a bit more about putting more money into reentry programs and career and technical education programs, I mean, acknowledging that most or nearly, perhaps all incarcerated people in prisons eventually return to their communities. You know, what is your approach then to a fix? Is it about building more beds and infrastructure, or is it overhauling the justice system?
It's both things have to happen. And again, we're talking right now, we're talking about the maximum security population. And you are absolutely correct. 90% of the inmates at our facilities, including GBCI, will be back in our communities. And so we need to do everything we can to prevent them from leaving out the back door. And then within a couple of years, coming back in the front door because of a reoffense. And that is one of the biggest problems with GBCI. So that maximum security facility has but one actual real vocational training program, masonry, and it takes 2 years to even get into that program. Hmm. And so you have individuals who are trying to do their best to try to get back into society, and they have to wait 2 years, and their only option is masonry. Now, that is not a way to provide a pathway to independence, self-reliance, and being on the straight and narrow. So we have to have a facilities that not only are about the incarceration and that element of it, but it has to have a much, much higher emphasis on the rehabilitation and providing the mental health and the drug and alcohol services that are necessary. There simply isn't the space at GBCI.
State Representative David Steffen of Green Bay with us on the future of the Green Bay Correctional Institution. What steps he wants lawmakers and the governor to take to address some of the oldest correction facility infrastructure in the state. Colin, about what you want lawmakers to prioritize as a new session gets underway next month. The number is 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin is projected to hit a $6.6 billion budget surplus. Questions that go along with this: what should state lawmakers prioritize? How could this historically high revenue balance be spent? What about the state's prison infrastructure? Join in along the way, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have Republican State Representative David Steffen of Green Bay, who stays with us. Representative, you were reelected to the Assembly in November, and earlier this fall, you said you would work to return the majority of the state budget surplus to residents through tax cuts. Does that contradict a proposal to build a new Green Bay prison for hundreds of millions of dollars?
No, because the state budget surplus is $6.6 billion. So $3.3 billion being returned, I think, is reasonable. It is an overpayment by the taxpayers. When you think about a half a billion dollar facility, the cost that, because we bond for it, would roughly be in the $60 to $70 million a year range. So that's a small percentage, $60 to $70 million a year for the facility. And by the way, we would have about a 30 to 40% reduction in staffing needs with a new facility.
Which, why is that?
Because new facilities use technology, floor plan, design, that require less staff. Facilities that were built in the 1800s were when labor was cheap, including prison guards. And because we have an incredible staffing shortage right now, and in fact, one of the GBCI staffing shortage is about 30%. Staffing shortage at another of the maximum security facilities, Waupun, is 50%. We need to find a more efficient way of running these facilities. And by using technology versus actually having as many guards walking up and down the miles, there's an opportunity to save a tremendous amount of money.
Let's bring in a caller, Lisa in Appleton. Hi, Lisa. What would you like to bring up?
Oh, hi. Well, I've been following this dilemma in the Green Bay prison system and throughout Wisconsin. And I just feel that there doesn't need to be another prison built at all. Those 970 people in that Green Bay facility could be redistributed throughout the prison system here in Wisconsin. There's plenty of states that have not built new prisons. Those 900 people that need to be rehabilitated, there are other buildings that can help them. We don't need to build another prison. There's plenty of people that can be looked at individually. If Secretary Carr sat down and looked at every single person in the prison, there's a lot of people that are underneath the old law that are just sitting waiting to get out, that are not being treated fairly as far as their original sentence.
Lisa, let's hear from Representative Steffen here on this. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Lisa. I appreciate the thought. And again, if there was more space available, vacant space available in the maximum security facilities, the other six, absolutely, this would be an easy situation. We could go from seven to six. And as it relates to this, this is not building another, going from 37 to 38 facilities. This would keep the number at 37. We're just going to build one that's humane. We're going to build one that is geared towards a replacement facility, that is geared towards rehabilitation, geared towards reducing the recidivism rate. That is something we should all want. A reality is that structures don't last forever. And we should be working to get ones that are inhumane, inefficient, crumbling, and replace them with ones that are modern and geared towards success for those inmates.
Let's look with an eye on the, you know, $6.6 billion budget surplus. There will be a number of competing big spending proposals on the table. How should projects with big price tags be evaluated and prioritized by Assembly Republicans?
Well, I know that this one will be a top priority. But it really has to take leadership from the governor and Secretary Carr, the Department of Corrections Secretary. My previous attempts related to this, including putting money in the budget to start the process, have not gone well. Essentially, the governor has stripped the language related to my proposals and just taken the money. And so kind of with Charlie Brown and Lucy with the football, we're not going to be in a situation where we're going to be putting money in towards a replacement facility just to have the governor take away the language and then use the money for something else. So we really need the governor to take a lead on this particular issue. And what people are saying about, broader prison reform, broader criminal justice reform, absolutely. I've been a leader on that, working with my partners and friends on the Democrat aisle on some of those things. But this journey of a thousand miles begins with one step. And this is a way that we can address several issues: overcrowding, staffing, understaffing, aging facility, and our problem with our recidivism rate. So we can take a step. It's not going to be, there isn't any magic bullet to solve all of our issues, but let's take one giant step forward by replacing an outdated, inhumane, overcapacity, understaffed facility.
Talking with State Representative David Steffen of Green Bay, you can join in at 800-642-1234. John now in Three Lakes. John, go ahead. What's on your mind?
I just think as someone with automation background, a lot of times management gets sold these bills of goods that they can save on the budget by reducing their employees, in turn getting some automated system. Oftentimes it's just these companies that are selling them false hopes. And even if the stuff doesn't function correctly, management continues just to kind of continue down this narrative. So this is kind of what I feel like I'm hearing is we can replace guards and employees with, machines and automation. Is that going to work? I tend to think 50% of it doesn't.
John, thank you for that, Representative Steffen. Very concerned there about automation in the prison system.
Yeah, well, the reality is that over the last 10 years, the move as it relates to replacement facilities that have gone this way have been successful and have recognized that those savings. Now, let's be clear, because we have such an immense staffing shortage, this doesn't mean a single guard loses a job. There will be no pink slips as a part of this. It just means that for the first time in a decade, we may be actually fully staffed. I have an inmate at the Green Bay Correctional Institute who brought his timesheet to me, who showed that he worked 337 hours in 1 month. Mm. 1 month. He had to work those because at a maximum security facility in particular, it's a 24/7 operation. It's not like McDonald's or the Burger Barn where you can shut down and just be open 4 days a week. You have to be open every minute of every day. And so our workers are being forced to work 16 to 18 hours a day, sometimes 7 days a week. That is not sustainable. And to address the staffing issues, we've done everything we could. We've done incredible pay increases, and we just can't get people to take these jobs. And so one of the ways to deal with it is if we can find some ways where it makes the environment better for them to work by having a better facility and adding some automation, we can solve our vacancy issue. And again, not a single guard would receive a pink slip as a result of it. This is about finally being fully staffed.
We have less than a minute left, but before we're out the door here, I want to just ask you about tax cuts and your take. We've heard your colleagues talking about a plan to create a flat income tax in Wisconsin. What is your proposal for what to do with the surplus and giving back to residents?
Well, tax cuts are like burritos. They're all delicious. So I don't care if it's for a flat tax, which I love that idea. I personally am in drafting and will be proposing a tax-free retirement plan. So every individual who at age 67 and above would have tax-free retirement for all of their retirement accounts. And that would make us a national leader. It would be a way to keep more people here and reduce the tax burden on our seniors.
Representative Steffen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Republican Representative David Steffen of Green Bay, first elected to the Assembly in 2014. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Districts around the state have struggled to retain and attract school nurses. We get up to speed on this workforce situation. State law requires districts to provide what's called emergency nursing services during the regular school day and for school-sponsored activities with students. Call in about school nurses, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Kelly Barlow is president of the Wisconsin Association of School Nurses and a district nurse for Shorewood School District. Kelly, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. Let's start with the Department of Health Services allocating more than $8 million to hire and recruit school nurses. What can you tell us about this funding?
You know, from the Wisconsin Association of School Nurses standpoint, we are so grateful for this increase in funding specifically for school nurses and health services in the schools. However, it's definitely not something that is going to provide school nurses, you know, long term within the school districts. It's a one-time grant. It's a one-year grant. So while it's really great, and the money is greatly appreciated. It's definitely a conversation starter for the need for nurses. We're very grateful for it.
A conversation starter, what do you see happening in schools? What is the workforce situation?
You know, I think school nurses flew under the radar, you know, well before the pandemic. Unless your child had a chronic health condition, most parents didn't even realize the school district their child attended even had a nurse. Obviously, the pandemic brought school nurses to the forefront with that. And now a lot of parents and staff and administrators are starting to see not only the need for school nurses, but definitely how important they are to ensuring students are healthy and safe during the school day. So the funding, which obviously is just this one time grant, it's definitely not going to be a sustainable fix to ensure that Wisconsin students have a school nurse.
Can you explain what state law requires of schools in the area of school nurses, what that looks like?
Sure. So what was mentioned was the emergency nursing services, but that doesn't necessarily mean having a nurse on site or on staff.
Ah.
So most school districts actually don't have a full-time nurse in every building. There are a handful of school districts throughout the state of Wisconsin that do put one nurse in every school building. But for the majority of the school districts in the state of Wisconsin, you have one nurse covering the entire school district.
Milwaukee Public Schools has one nurse for roughly every 1,200 students. Is that consistent around the state or is that an anomaly?
No, that's pretty consistent. Some nurses are working 1 to 2, 3, 4,000 students, and other nurses are working 1 to every about 500 students. So the ratio that MPS has is fairly common throughout the state.
Why are there so few school nurses?
From our standpoint, we do believe that it's because there is no legislation that requires a school nurse within the school building full-time throughout the day, but then also there just isn't funding for a licensed healthcare professional in the building.
Has the workload changed for school nurses? Has it increased?
Greatly. I know that, you know, looking 20, 30 years ago, the biggest conversation that school nurses were having were around, you know, the common colds that would come during cold and flu season, and then head lice. They were always, you know, head lice was a very big conversation within the schools where we're doing all school checks. However, that has significantly changed. We are seeing more kids with, or within public schools that have chronic health conditions. We're seeing an increase in food allergies and asthma and things like that, where those nursing services and nursing interventions during the school day are very needed. And it's being put on, or the responsibility of taking care of those students is being put on administrative staff or administrative assistants.
When you talk about those additional responsibilities and this era of being a school nurse, you know, something that has really come to the forefront is the mental health resources of schools. And I'm just wondering, you know, what is the role of school nurses as we see this documented spike in mental health issues among students?
Yeah, there's this this idea that nurses are not well trained in mental health. And so a lot of school districts will defer anything mental health to other student support services like school counselors or school psychologists. However, the registered nurse working as a school nurse has a bachelor's degree and they have extensive education in mental health. So they are an untapped resource, often, you know, in the building, but not used for mental health. And I do think that having the focus of mental health be with the school counselors and the psychologists is absolutely valuable, but not utilizing the nurse in that conversation as well is just a resource lost.
Talking about the shortage of school nurses, the workload, the capacity in Wisconsin with Kelly Barlow, who is a district nurse in the Shorewood School District in Milwaukee, as well as president of the Wisconsin Association of School Nurses. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Kelly, you mentioned the bachelor's degree. Is there a specific certification that school nurses must have to be a nurse in the building of a school?
So school nurses in Wisconsin do need to have a bachelor's degree, but there is a certification that you can obtain for school nursing. It's not required. And then there is a national certification that, again, you can obtain, but is not required.
In what ways does school nursing differ from other types of nursing, like caring for patients in a hospital?
So school nurses are not often doing a lot of that bedside nursing skills. They're doing a lot more of that administrative work. They're working more as like a case manager, where other staff members in the building who are stationed at one building are doing that day-to-day triaging. So the school nurse isn't necessarily the one handing out Band-Aids and ice packs and, you know, calling parents to pick up their children when they're sick. They are doing healthcare plans and attending IEP and 504 meetings. They're scheduling flu clinics to come on site or giving families resources to go get the healthcare that they need. So a lot of the school nurses are doing a lot more of that case management work and not necessarily the day-to-day triaging.
And, you know, as a parent, sometimes we think that school nurses just, you know, send kids home, like they're like the gatekeeper to the classroom. How do school nurses, though, keep kids in school?
Yeah, so providing those preventative healthcare information to families, you know, making sure that they have information on where they can get their child their flu shot and their COVID boosters, because we know that vaccines are part of that preventative healthcare, and educating classrooms on hand washing and covering your mouth and, you know, when you sneeze, and, you know, reminding families that they can wear or send their child with a mask whether they have COVID or not, if it's just a cold or flu, like the mask is still gonna help prevent the spread of any respiratory illness. So really having that education piece is really gonna help to keep kids in school. And when there is a school nurse in the building managing, you know, students with chronic health conditions, we're able to connect with that family on a greater level to ensure that the child with, you know, type 1 diabetes, they have everything that they need here in school to be successful. So they're not constantly staying home from school because their diabetes is out of control and they can't get it in control enough to be in school. So the school nurse really does play a huge role in keeping kids in school too.
How do the responsibilities of school nurses, how might they change from the elementary level to the high school level?
It's a lot about educating the kiddos that come in. You know, when they're little and they just come into the health office saying things like, I don't feel good, and really trying to tell them, like, I need a little bit more information. What doesn't feel good? And really having that conversation with kids, even when they're really little. And then how that kind of changes is when they're older, really teaching them, like, okay, what can we do to make sure that this isn't happening again? So the kid with chronic headaches, you know, that's a deeper education piece where we can say, you know, with the older high school kids, well, what are you having for breakfast? How much water are you drinking? Because it really is putting it on them. A lot of high school kids get themselves ready for school in the morning, whereas elementary age children are, you know, relying on the adults at home to give them, you know, make sure that they're getting proper nutrition in the morning and making sure their water bottle is full to send them to school with. So the education from younger child in the elementary to older is a lot about how independent are we looking for these kids to be.
Kelly Barlow leads the Wisconsin Association of School Nurses, is a district nurse for Shorewood School District. Colin, with your story as a school nurse, how the role, the work has changed, or share your interactions you've had with a school nurse as a parent working with a school nurse. Join in 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As we talk about the school nurse workforce in Wisconsin, how districts have prioritized having a full-time school nurse, and the impact now as we see COVID, RSV, and flu circulating. Call in at 800-642-1234. Kelly Barlow heads up the Wisconsin Association of School Nurses, its mission to support professional school nurses in our state, and she is a school nurse in the Shorewood School District. So, Kelly, talk about this spike in flu and RSV and COVID cases really hitting those young kids hard. We've heard concerns about a tridemic, you know, and school nurses often being the first line of defense there as these kids come in. How are school nurses dealing with this current spike in respiratory infections?
So a lot of the school nurses are really tapped into a lot of the not only COVID testing, but also flu testing and vaccine resources throughout the state. So again, like what I said about school nurses doing a lot of that case management, essentially is what we're doing is making sure that we have all of those resources to be able to funnel that out to the families to make sure they can stay ahead of it and do everything they can to protect their child and their family from becoming ill. And then of course, when they do get ill, making sure they have the resources that they need to, you know, seek medical attention should they need it, or, you know, even if it's just connecting with the teacher to find out what we can drop off at their house for them to get, you know, if they have schoolwork that they need to get done. However we can support families when they have sick children is what we're here for.
What impact have those rapid tests have as a role in the school nurse office?
So we have tests, but we do not actually test students in the building. If a child is going home with illness symptoms, we can actually send tests home with the families to be able to test there. And it's really nice to give them that resource for them to call back and say, you know, we just took this rapid test, it's negative, but we're going to keep an eye on them. You know, we're going to go maybe to, you know, the doctor's office to get tested for flu as well. It's a really great first step, and it kind of buffers that need to quickly rush to the doctor when you're not sure if you need to be seen. You know, a lot of families really enjoy being able to do those COVID tests at home just so they can say, okay, it's not COVID, or at least not COVID yet. We'll check again, you know, later tonight, we'll do another test. So to be able to give them that resource and have them not feel like they're in this panic to make a doctor's appointment is really great.
You know, and the era of contact tracing is behind us in COVID, but how do districts and school nurses track the trends or what is surging in the schools?
You know, I know a lot of school districts went away with like a dashboard that they would post on their website to keep track. Some did it daily. We actually still do it weekly in Shorewood. And that's, I feel like that's the best way to kind of track trends, to see what buildings have positive cases, but then also keep the families informed. I think a weekly dashboard throughout this school year is a great opportunity to really connect with the families so that they know what's going on, so they don't feel like they're out of the loop.
That's interesting. I mean, that's really essentially about communication and keeping people up to date on what's happening. And so you see those dashboards as really helpful from the COVID era that perhaps shouldn't go away.
Yeah, I think it helps keep families in the know. Hmm. And that's the most important part. When families feel like they don't know what's going on in the schools, that's when we start seeing, you know, families getting really excited during like school board meetings, feeling like they're not only being heard, but that they have no idea what's going on in the building. So the more information that you can give families without being overbearing about it, of course, but you know, keeping them in the know is actually a really good thing. And I think it just keeps everything, you know, kind of calm waters.
Let's talk about immunization. School nurses are the ones ensuring students have all vaccinations, those vaccination records required to be able to enroll in public schools and through the years. What challenges are there in trying to ensure those immunizations are up to date?
So we have requirements to verify that students are up to date with their vaccinations or have a waiver on file. So here in Wisconsin, you can still waive childhood or any vaccines due to personal, religious, or medical reasons. So there's, by the 30th day of school, we have to make sure that anyone who is not in compliance with the vaccination law, they start getting legal notices. And that comes, it's a notice from the state that we have to you know, put our names on the bottom and send out to families. And they're very harsh. And
yes, they are. But they're startling. Yes.
Yeah, they're definitely firm in what they're saying. But it is a law, which is why they sound so scary. So often it's just that, you know, we don't have the record, or you know, there was an update and it never updated on our end. So. You know, really looking at, you know, who's out of compliance and who do we need to touch base with. It's really great when you have a nurse in the building who can kind of triage a lot of that, because sometimes it comes down to the dates. There's specific dates for a lot of the vaccinations, like the MMR vaccination has to be given within 5 days of the first birthday. So if it was given, you know, 6 days before the first birthday, not everyone would be able to notice that or recognize that as an issue, where they might just see, oh, they have it, they're good. So, but it's technically not within compliance within the law. So, you know, that's a huge role of the school nurse, is to make sure that not only students have their vaccinations, that they have the resources they need to obtain missing vaccinations, but that also it is fully compliant with the vaccination law.
And the resources there to obtain a missing vaccination. I mean, kids got behind in COVID on their immunizations. And then we saw the whole pediatric clinic backlog just to try to get a kid in. Those are real challenges for families.
Yeah, and some of the great resources that I think a lot of people forget about is your local health department. A lot of local health departments are a part of the childhood immunization program through a federal law or a federal funding, and those vaccinations for the most part are free. Definitely if you're on state insurance, Medicare or Medicaid, those vaccinations are free through local health departments. And they might come at a cost if you have private insurance. And it's usually not much though. So, but I do know like our local local health department was administering childhood vaccinations at zero cost.
Kelly Barlow with us, president of the Wisconsin Association of School Nurses, as we look at the work of school nurses and the situation in schools. Kelly, you know, your association is, you know, making lawmakers aware of situation lobbying. You know, what should lawmakers do when there are really difficult staffing shortages in other areas of healthcare and other professions?
Yeah, I mean, we see it all, you know, nationwide. There's a shortage of nurses everywhere. And safe staffing is a crucial part of that. And I think we need to start taking that very seriously. The nurse to patient ratio, whether it's in a hospital, in a clinic, or in a school setting, that needs to start being taken seriously, because a lot of nurses are facing that stress and that burnout very quickly. And we're seeing a lot of nurses leaving the profession. It doesn't matter what, you know, hospital, clinic, or school, it doesn't matter what field they're in, they're leaving the profession because it's just too much. So I think, you know, looking ahead, lawmakers really need to be persistent about ensuring that our healthcare workers are taken care of, and specifically our nurses.
Just a few moments left. You said the $8.2 million, the one-year grant, was a conversation starter. Would you like to see a continuation of that? What would be the next step?
I think the next step is ensuring that public schools are funded adequately, and in changing legislation that requires at the very least one full-time school nurse per school district. I think that's a step in the right direction. I think it's very much needed, especially coming off of the pandemic. And it's, you know, every student in Wisconsin deserves to have a nurse in their building.
Kelly, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Kelly Barlow is president of the Wisconsin Association of School Nurses and a district nurse in the Shorewood School District. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.